This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
Maybe we're not so different. Who are you under there?
I'm Vengeance.
Welcome everybody to Cinematic Animalia, your weekly foray into the biology of movie monsters. Today we are on our 100th episode ever, and to celebrate, we're going to do a movie with no ecological themes or interesting creatures whatsoever.
Fuck yeah.
As you do. Yeah, we are looking at The Batman with a special guest who we will introduce in a second.
It's not The Batman.
Kind of The Batman.
It's actually Zoe Kravitz.
She's in the studio. The studio. Sorry.
Your sex dungeon that you record in.
We'll go over some news first, introduce our special guest, tell you a bit about the movie, our thoughts, and then we will create some truly horrific humans, including a man-bat, a cat-woman, and a proper penguin man. As always, the show will be broken up into those different segments. We'll have time codes below, so whatever tickles your fancy, go and find it. But before we get into that, my name's Sam Perrin. I'm an invasive ecologist and climate data analyst based in Trondheim, Norway. I also run the website Ecology for the Masses alongside Adam Harsick, a disease ecologist at the Ben Gurion University of the Batman. Alongside Adam is the Baroness, Her Ladyship Libbingham, our story specialist and runner at Short Story Soup.
Wait, Libby, are you the Baroness?
I swear to God, I am.
Swear to me!
That was terrible.
And last but not least, we are joined by Dave, a vet and our movie physiologist. Oh, but not last and not least today, because we're also joined by Tuppence Jr. Ryan himself. No, Tuppence Jr.
No.
Terrence Jameson. Something along
Teddy
those
Link.
Lines.
No, not even close. Thaddeus.
Woo! Thaddeus Jimballs. TJ.
I think it actually stands for Timbo Jimbo.
Timbo Jimbo, yeah.
You guys know I've been here the whole first season.
It was first season.
This is true. I mean, the audience doesn't actually know you've been here this entire time, just very quiet.
If you go back to the first season and wonder why for 10 episodes in a row we're like, we're not joined by TJ, but he'll be here next week, that's why. But TJ is actually the reason this podcast ever got formed in the first place.
Not at all. Don't blame it on me.
He and I were drunkenly playing FIFA.
You claim nothing.
This is your fault.
It's all your fault.
Goddamn.
No, we had this kind of idea briefly that we'd all drunkenly discussed while watching the World Cup in 2018.
So drunk.
And I was just like, oh, this is a bit silly. And then TJ one night was just like, this is a, you should really do this. Like, you should, Sam, you should really do this. You guys should, I believe in you. I believe in you. And so, yeah, that was the motivation that needed me to push me over the edge and get Adam and Dave into gear. And it wouldn't have happened without you, TJ.
Clearly terrible advice.
It's all your fault.
Fuck. It is.
But for those who don't know, Dave and TJ studied veterinary science at the same place, but whereas Dave and a lot of his other mates went off into be practitioners and practicing vets, TJ, you went into research, right? So can you tell us a little bit about what your everyday is like?
Yeah, so I'm still a vet like Dave, but you know, a lot better, of course.
Fuck you.
And so I didn't go into private practice like a lot of my friends. Well, actually, I did for a few months, but I had an opportunity to move into research. And it's a different career, but still working a lot with animals on a day-to-day basis. So many animals are used for research purposes, whether it's, you know, in the lab for biology or biomedical reasons, or if it's out in the field doing field studies like for ecological work. There's veterinarians involved in all this, and a lot of people don't realize that probably. And so my day-to-day is really still caring for those animals. They still need clinical treatments, basic veterinary care, and among other things. And, of course, also the regulatory oversight of all the work that involves animals. It's highly regulated. So we play a big role in making sure that anything that's done with animals is done ethically and humanely. And that also includes working with bats.
Are any of them named Robert?
What type of bats?
Big brown bats, and yes, they're all named Robert.
Did you say big brown bats?
Yes, big brown bats.
Is big brown bat the actual, the common name?
Yes.
Oh, really? really? Okay, I thought you were joking.
No.
I thought you were just, you know, describing them.
Yeah, I'm a big jokester here. No, this is serious.
I have 85. Do I have 90? I have 90 from the man with the face at table 4.
This is terrible. You don't know what you're doing.
Adam Sandler?
Yeah, that's right. I collect antiquities. I'm a serious person.
News this week. We've talked before about genetic engineering's attempts to resurrect extinct species. Now, we have talked about this in the context before of the mammoth, which was a species that obviously was wiped out long, long time ago. And at a point where humans were not the kind of force of nature we are today. Of course, we were still having impacts on ecosystems back then. We were very much ecosystem engineers. But this week, there's been news of attempts to resurrect using cloning and splicing the Tasmanian tiger or thylacine, which is a species that was very directly wiped out by humans. Farmers in Tasmania, early settlers, colonizers, whatever you want to call them, wiped them out because they were going after sheep. So this is a species where we really fucked up. And this is an opportunity to resurrect an extinct species.
To unfuck up.
We've talked before about the fact that, you know, these things cost millions of dollars. Genomics projects are really expensive. And I don't think this is the best use of research grants. However, if you can get a crazy philanthropist to donate $5 million to your cause, which is what's happened in this case, I don't know if the said philanthropist was crazy. I mean, there's no guarantee that that $5 million was going to go to an environmental project. So I'm kind of optimistic and behind this one. Adam, I know you were very much against the Mammoth Project. Yeah. How do you feel about this one?
First off, for the crazy philanthropist comment, I feel that any project like this involves some kind of John Hammond type with his little bone cane and mosquito and amber walking around, you know, with his little maniacal hands going back and forth. But in this case, I've been thinking about it a lot today, and I think I actually agree with it in the sense that this is an animal that, for all intents and purposes, likely would still exist today if it wasn't for humans and our incredible fuck up on an ecological scale. Unlike the mammoth, which went extinct for a variety of reasons, some of which would have been humans, but mostly would have been changing climate. It makes no sense to bring back an animal that has no business being alive in today's climate. But for an animal that is adapted to, maybe not with climate change, especially with how hard Australia is being hit by climate change with flooding and temperatures and fires and all the fun stuff that goes on down there, it makes sense to try this, especially if it's not being paid for with government funds.
I was going to say the philanthropist's name is Mr. Russell Wilson, and I thought it was funny because how they came to donate $5 million was watching the professor who's heading up this genomics project, watching him on YouTube. So he watched some YouTube clips of this guy,
really?
Was really touched by the story, and said, okay, here's $5 million.
Crazy famous people on YouTube, you know, sometimes you get $5 million. Mm-hmm. Dedicated to thylacines, and sometimes you get Justin Bieber. It's a mixed bag.
And sometimes you get doxxed, so who knows?
So what are they using for a surrogate in this case?
They are trying to use a Donart or a Tasmanian Devil as a host surrogate.
Okay. Donart.
Really? Okay. Donarts are fucking tiny. Donarts are really small animals, but they're all from the same family. The Tasmanian devil, the Tasmanian tiger was the biggest example of a dasyurid, which is a type of marsupial that essentially kind of fills the same role as rodents when they're tiny and cats, dogs when they're larger. So the Tasmanian tiger operated in the same kind of niche as wild dogs or coyotes do. But them being marsupials means that they are significantly dumber.
The Tasmanian devil's liable to get you. He's a mean, vicious, nasty, no good, baggy-eyed, marble-headed ignoramus. He's a stupid,
flattery will get you nowhere.
All right, this week we did The Batman. Watch what happens when an uber-rich social elite white boy chooses a black latex-winged bodysuit and a motorcycle over some much-needed therapy and counseling after the death of his parents at a young age. Once you pop, the villains don't stop as the Batman, capital T, finds himself geocaching for deadly Zodiac-type clues around Gotham by a mysterious masked Moriarty. He gets help from a chaotic neutral cat lady, who he wants to bang, two definitely evil birdmen, and a rule-bending cop to solve the puzzles as they save the city from a biblical flood that will purge the very soul of Gotham.
TJ, you want to go first? What did you like about this movie?
There's a lot of I liked about it, actually. You know, it was probably the first Batman movie I actually liked since The Dark Knight. We'll just forget about Batman v Superman and all those in between. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good Batman flick. One of my favorite scenes, though, was definitely the chase on the highway between the Penguin and Batman. There's those giant explosions going on, and I don't know. I just thought it was a really kind of cliche, corny scene, but at the same time, just really funny.
I loved the detective noir element of this film. I thought that was like really well done. And I also enjoyed the realism of Batman's gadgets not always working super well. The lenses yeah. that he uses to record don't exactly give perfect images. And I really enjoyed the scene where Catwoman's in the club and he's trying to like zoom in on her signal. And he's like, come on. Come on, fucking thing. Come on. I updated your software. Why aren't you working?
I thought Robert Pattinson was a great Batman. The whole cast in general, I thought was fantastic. I thought Paul Dano's portrayal of the Riddler in particular made Heath Ledger's Joker look almost comical in comparison. I thought it was a really disturbing portrait of somebody who's clearly not very well. And I love the fact that he thought Batman was working with him the entire time.
Yeah.
And I've seen a lot of people say that this is a completely humorless film. I disagree. That scene where he jumps off the building in a big, like,
the wingsuit,
massive, like, wingsuit was hilarious, especially when he just, like, almost decapitates himself on the bridge. I thought the bit when he went into the abandoned mansion with Commissioner Gordon, he said no guns, and Commissioner Gordon's just like, yeah, that's your thing, man. I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah.
And the bit where he's walking towards the car after the car crash and there's the flames in the background, and then he like ducks down and pokes his head in. I just turned to my wife in the cinema and said, peek-a-boo. I thought that scene was, I know it's meant to like build tension, but I thought that scene was hilarious for the worst.
Also, to piggyback off that comment, just real quick, that I thought the scene with the like the other cop was equally funny too. Him treating him like shit as Batman, and then when he's Bruce Wayne, he's like, oh yeah, yes. It's like whatever you want. I thought that was really funny.
Hey, oh my god, Bruce Wayne, fuck you, Batman. Same guy.
Yeah. And I loved how, because people are just like, oh, Batman's emo. Batman's a man whose parents were murdered and he fucking broods constantly. Batman is the most emo superhero out there. This is totally in line with the character in all forms, except perhaps Will Arnett's Lego Batman.
I will agree with the Paul Dano's portrayal of the Riddler was really good. I don't know if it makes the Heath Ledger's Joker look amateur by comparison, but I do think that they did a really good job of capturing.
Not amateur, but just a little.
I think I would disagree with that. I still think that his Joker was better than this, but maybe just because we didn't get enough of Paul Dano's Riddler. But I feel that they did really capture that aspect of a serial killer being truly disconnected from the way that, quote, normal people think. Like, he thinks Batman is working with him, but he's literally trying to stop him. Like, this guy does not, his brain isn't firing on all cylinders, or at least not the way that everyone else's is. The look of this movie was beautiful. I had turned to Libby when we were in the theater and said that every one of these scenes, like every frame being a portrait, kind of, you hear that expression thrown around with some movies, and I think that it applies for this one. Gotham felt seedy and gross and dangerous. A like that I will also come back to the dislike is that he did feel like a very realistic Batman, but I'll touch more on that in the next section. I liked him as emo. It works. This guy is a weirdo who stays up all night beating up people on the street, and of course he's going to be this pale, strange dude to see in the daylight because he doesn't do normal people things. So I think it really works. And fucking Colin Farrell killed it.
Yeah, that feeds into my likes. I mean, Colin Farrell, I put it in all caps in my notes. Colin Farrell crushed. Like, I want more. And I found his scenes funny, too. Like, they were comical. Like, not in a making fun of him way, but, like, I wanted to just, he just brought, like, an element of humor to it that I felt really interesting. Yeah, I thought the villainization of Batman was an interesting take, to like basically not give a shit about his whole family's philanthropic foundation. And then just becoming like complicit by his chosen ignorance. A similar note to Adam, I like that they superheroed him. You know, he is a man in a suit with gadgets after all. He's not Superman. He's not the Flash. He's not, you know, these actual superpowered people. But that also, there's a bit of a negative to that I'll go into later. And I did like the detective bit as well, but I also have a negative on that. So
I want to add on to Adam's point earlier. Glasgow is an amazing Gotham. That quintessential American city of Glasgow. Just
for the close up shots. Those faraway shots of Pittsburgh and or New York were great. Manhattan specifically.
TJ, what didn't you like?
Okay, I know we talked about him being emo, but I hated his emo bangs. I mean, he's a grown-ass man. I get you lost your parents. I get we're going through that theme, but his haircut just pissed me off. beyond that, yeah, I mean, it was a little bit long. But, you know, I think for the most part, it was worth it. I wasn't really a big fan of the Joker reference at the end. I think we've kind of been there, done that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why we had to revisit that again. But otherwise than that, you know, again, like I said, I think I liked the movie overall for most of it, and it was pretty great.
Yeah. The motorcycle scene of Catwoman and Batman driving off at the end for what seemed like half of the goddamn film, I was just like, all right, I get it. They're fine. They're moving in opposite directions. Why am I watching this? I also had some concerns with the Batman not really seeming to dole out justice the way that he thinks he
justice.
Should. They have that wonderful scene where after they've chased the Penguin across with that big highway chase, they've blown up an oil tanker, definitely killed some people. And then they have the Penguin tied up at that construction yard. And they're just like, all right, let's go. And the Penguin's like, oh, what, are you going to leave me here? And I was thinking, no, you're going to call the police and have him arrested for blowing up a chunk of your highway. Why are you leaving him there to just go free? What are you doing?
I really hated the whole El Ratha Alada thing.
Yeah.
It was so weird and confusing and needlessly complicated for something that ended up being so simple. We had a fantastic tweet brought to our attention by a fan of the show and friend of the show, Danny Crowley from the Aficionados podcast. So it was by, the tweet was by Mari Costa on Twitter. It was just, my Batman review is that the funniest part of the Batman is the amount of time Batman and Commissioner Gordon spend listing animals with wings. Penguins have wings. Bats have wings also. Falcons do have wings. Very funny. 10 out of 10. It's so long. And the final piece feels a little tacked on. Dave, we were talking about this last week, the fact that you have to have a big, like, Batman saves Gotham set piece. But it just, I don't know. I found the crime element of the movie much more interesting than the Riddler blowing up a bunch of chunks of the seawall.
Yeah, same.
I absolutely agree with TJ that despite the fact I love that actor, Barry Keoghan, I think it is. We've seen in a bunch of things recently, like Chernobyl. Adam and I saw him in American Animals a couple of years back. He was more recently in Marvel's The Eternals. Amazing actor, but you don't need to have the Joker in this movie.
No.
So I think that I agree with some of the other hosts' ideas of what they don't like about this movie. I think when I came out of this movie, I didn't think it was perfect, but I thought it was close to perfect. But the more I thought about it, the more issues kind of popped up. I still very much like this movie. It's fantastic. You should definitely go and see it. But it is a very long movie that doesn't necessarily need to be long. The length never bothered me. The story works. But towards the back half of the movie, I completely forgot that the Riddler was part of it. And it's like, oh yeah, we have to wrap up this plot thread because it's still going on. The sneakiness of Batman is something that has always been joked about in other movies. But the last scene with Catwoman in the mausoleum, and she just turns around and he's there with his motorcycle that he rode up on, you would fucking hear that from a kilometer away. There's no way, unless he just, that entire sequence that Dave hated with the motorcycles in the end, unless he walked his motorcycle up that entire way wearing his goddamn costume with a cape in broad daylight, no fucking way. Speaking of Catwoman, I know that there are relationships between Batman and Catwoman in the comics. It was very shoehorned in this and it made no sense. And it really took me out of it in a lot of ways. And then I think my final issue was, I appreciate this being a realistic Batman, but it was too realistic. He did not feel like a superhero. He just felt like a dude who went out in a costume and got the fuck beat out of him by most of the people he encountered.
Yep.
And only the very end of the movie was he mostly competent. And that doesn't make sense for a Batman who's supposedly competent and operating for years at this point.
Yeah,
I think that was my similar point to what I was saying earlier, is I feel like I liked that they made him more realistic. They almost made him a little too realistic. It just seemed like he wasn't doing much the whole movie. Even the detective part that I liked, it really wasn't detective. Like, he didn't really solve any of the Riddler's riddles. He was just like, oh, the Riddler's telling me to do this, so I'm going to do this. Like, there was no, like, I'm going to be one step ahead of the villain. It was just like, let me just follow the step one, step two, step three instructions this guy has left for me and see what happens, because I don't fucking know. So that was kind of weird, because they were trying to sell him like this super smart guy, and it just didn't really seem like he was that. I love Paul Dano. Too bad he wasn't in this movie. Also not nearly enough Andy Serkis as well. I have the same issue that I had with Dune. If we can just trim those like repeat offender shots where he's just like, you know, the motorcycle scene for one, or like the 20 shot repeating shots where he's just like walking up in the darkness, then you'd have more time for character screen time. Like, this movie is 3 hours. There's no excuse for having your villain be on screen for less than 10 minutes. I also say my dislike, I love Paul Dano. Obviously, like, I do think he did a good job as the Riddler, what little we saw of him, but it absolutely ruined my dream casting of Bo Burnham as the Riddler.
I wanted David Tennant as the Riddler from, like, for 15 years.
He would also be fantastic as the Riddler.
To show you what I see, that I'm the only one who matches you, who challenges you, who'll do anything for you.
So for trivia, Robert Pattinson made some comments, I think, in the middle of 2020 about how he just was not going to work out for this. They were blown out of proportion a little bit, taking it a little bit out of context. But, I mean, he doesn't look unfit at all. He's in good shape, but I appreciate...
He's very much a gym-trained body, just not an insane one.
But, and I really appreciate that. Libby was talking last week about how much he hates fat jokes and that sort of thing. This plays into the same sort of thing. I think that this trend of people just looking like ridiculous Greco-Roman statues in every movie, like Chris Hemsworth, absolutely, power to you. The discipline that must take to get in that sort of shape is unbelievable, but I think it sets a really, really weird and awful standard. And I think the sort of shape that Robert Pattinson is in here, or Hugh Jackman was in the first X-Men movie, I think that is totally fine. I didn't think at any point, oh, this is unrealistic, he couldn't be doing this because he doesn't look like Dwayne The Rock Johnson. That didn't occur to me. And I like the fact that Robert Pattinson was like, look, of course I'm going to work out, but I'm not, you know, eating brown rice and chicken for, you know, 16 hours a day and spending the other 8 hours in the gym.
I'm going to throw a feminist card here. Well, I think, and I agree with all of that, I will say that this is the type of body issues that women in Hollywood and the media have been facing for decades now. And prime example is Catwoman here. Don't get me wrong, she looks great, but you compare her to, let's say, you know, she's a gymnast, right? That's what Catwoman is. Why don't we look at Simone Biles' body and you tell me if they look the fucking same? Like, the proportions are very unrealistic, and it's not healthy to compare women to that standard of thin and, in my opinion, emaciation, because that is malnutrition when I can see your collarbones.
And building off of that, why are we putting fake boobs onto Catwoman's costume? Zoe Kravitz is a very slim woman, and there are some very concerning direct side-by-side photos of what she looks like on the red carpet versus the character they've made for her as Catwoman, where it just looks like they straight up put like water balloons in her costume. Like,
huge step up from Halle Berry.
Never seen it.
Low bar, though. Low bar, yeah. I just want to point out, not Halle Berry's fault at all. Not her fault.
So, Robert Pattinson, auditioned for the Batman using Val Kilmer's original bat suit from Batman Forever, 1995. Because his head didn't fit into Val Kilmer's cowl, he wore the one George Clooney wore in Batman and Robin. Which leads me to believe that Val Kilmer has a tiny head.
Had it been washed since?
Who knows?
Probably not.
Gross.
The other bit I have is Colin Farrell, which obviously, like, he's unrecognizable. He said he went out in to, like, I think it was like a Starbucks in his full getup, and said no one recognized him. But he said he, like, walked up to his own kid with all the getup on, and he says, and this is a direct quote: "When my kid saw me for the first time, he was utterly horrified." I have it on iPhone. He was horrified. I like this image of his kid just, like, absolutely screaming.
That sounds like the image of Ralph Fiennes when he was Voldemort, because of the nature of the costume, the very long and flowy robe he was wearing. He had to wear, I think, garters on his legs to kind of help hold some of it up. And he also wore heels to help him with the height.
Mm-hmm.
And my favorite story of him is getting that makeup on and the garter and the heels and all that for the first time. Some kid was on set that day. He turns and, like, makes a face at him. The kid started crying. And he just, like, yes, I did it. Perfect.
I respect anybody who has to learn to wear heels for the first time in their, like, 40s or 50s.
You don't have German sparkle parties, Sam.
No shit.
Even at the sparkle parties, I never went with heels. Adam did a couple of times. And even though Adam was pretty good on heels, I could see, like, the way it was kind of tense in the knees and that sort of thing.
It's not easy.
No, not the knees, the calves, right?
Calves, yeah. I think, for me.
Yeah, I lived in a town in Germany that called Freiburg, which was just covered with Flustersteine.
Cobblestones.
Cobblestones, yep. Forgetting the English word. I'm so cultured, I just can't even remember the words in English.
I travel.
And I saw...
Cultured.
Yeah, I saw women run through cobblestone streets in high heels. It was incredible. I mean, I'm sure, you know, it's like when you go to France and you're like, oh, look at them going around the Champs-Élysées. There's no order, but nobody crashes. But, like, you're watching it for 5 minutes. A crash happens on the Champs-Élysées every hour. I'm assuming there's, like, a woman a night in Freiburg who breaks an ankle, but I didn't see that.
Yeah. So, you
know. Not if you're a professional.
Why are we talking about high heels?
I was just going to say, to piggyback off that, though, it's well known that supermodels actually train in high heels on treadmills. So they'll, like, practice walking.
Oh, my God. Do you have to have, like, specialized treadmills? Can treadmills take that sort of shit on a constant basis?
Okay. I mean, when you weigh, like, 15 pounds, it's not that much force.
That is a good point, yeah. Also, I think Colin Farrell, better Robert De Niro than Robert De Niro.
I could agree with that. I could definitely agree with that.
Yeah. Because I was watching it and I was like, he's just doing a Robert De Niro impression, but it's better than if they'd gotten Robert De Niro.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about, you know, just how unrecognizable he is facially, but his voice is insane.
Yeah.
You wouldn't even recognize him from that.
Yeah, three Americans here. Was everybody on board with the accent?
Definitely.
100%.
Yeah, he said he got that accent. I think it was from a New York City healthcare worker. I don't know if it was, like, videos or someone that he, like, interacted with, but yeah.
Do you do an impersonation of me at all? Have you worked at?
No. I mean, like, no, I haven't, but I mean, I maybe I did. I forgot.
You could try to wing it. You can go for it. I'll close my eyes.
So, before we start creating some truly memorable and horrifying Batman characters in the flesh, if you have any thoughts or questions, you can find Adam and I on Twitter. I'm at Big Dr. Fishboy. Adam is at Hassick Adam. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can visit our website, cinematicaanimalia.com, or email us at cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. You can also chat or game with us on Discord. You can find the link to our Discord channels in the episode description or on the website. If you want to read Libby's work, you can visit shortstorysoup.substack.com and read A Whopping Plentitude. You can find A Whopping Plentitude of short stories. And if you want to hear about some of the more hardcore and less movie-related science that Adam, myself, and a gigantic team of international writers write about, check out ecologyforthemasses.com. And as always, if you can leave us an in-app rating, preferably 5 stars, please do. And let us know which movie monster you would like us to cover.
Yes, please.
We're always looking for suggestions from the fans. Just an added note for our 100th episode. Thank you, everybody who stuck with us over the last 4 years, despite our hiatuses, despite our sometimes constant breaks. We appreciate your listenership.
For TJ and I's section this week, we wanted to look at the realistic adaptations that would create a full Man-Bat. And going into this, we obviously do realize there is a Man-Bat in the comic. A half-man, half-bat.
Who's a woman?
There's also a She-Bat. I don't know why they went from man to she.
Hot.
Was the conversion. You think it would be He-Bat, She-Bat, or Woman-Bat, Man-Bat. But no, they decided to split the difference, and there is a Man-Bat and there is a She-Bat. In terms of designing a realistic half-man, half-bat, I just decided that I was going to go full-on in for this. And please, guys, feel free to chip in as we go, and TJ, add whatever elements that you would like. So bats, in terms of their flight, we've discussed this before. They do sort of a rowing through the air, sort of extending their fingers or their webbed hands. They sort of swim through the air more than a typical bird, which has kind of the flapping motion. I have no problems with our giant half-human, half-bat potentially having wings. I just think that they're not going to be functional. There'll be big chunks of webbed skin that'll sort of come off. He'll probably have his little hands still at the end of them, so he's not going to have like wings that extend off his back. And like his cape, seen repeatedly in the movie, I will spend the entire time as he's driving on the motorcycle going, how the fuck isn't that getting caught in the back tire? Are you not going to tie that up?
It's going to be some problems.
Why the fuck would you think a cape was a good idea for riding a motorcycle?
No capes.
Thank you, Edna Mode.
Now, in terms of the different bat types, so I had not realized that there are tree bats and cave bats and that they're actually distinctive groups, Adam, that get broken up by ecologists. Now, one of the big features is that tree bats typically are solitary. They tend to roost in tree cavities and hibernate kind of all by themselves. Cave bats, on the other hand, do tend to form bigger groups. They tend to hunt as groups, and they tend to hibernate as groups within caves. Batman is a well-known loner. I don't think that he's going to be a cave bat. I think he's going to be a tree bat, which means he will not be going back to the bat cave at the end of this. He's going to be going back to the treehouse. I very much see him as having a treehouse.
Please, the bat treehouse? Branding is everything, Dave.
Sonar. Bats are well known for the ability to echolocate, to generate pulses of sound as they kind of get closer to their prey, and it tells them direction, location. It allows them to track. Now, as they get closer, so let's say a bat hunting a moth, they're going to want to generate those pulses more frequently as they get closer to allow for more split-second changes. This fits. All the Batman movies, we see that as Batman gets closer to his enemies, his yelling increases. And we got to see that with the Riddler as well during this, where he found himself standing in that room where he's trying to figure out what the bomb is at the end, going, what's the bomb? What's the plan? What's the plan? What's the plan? What's the plan? Right. Where's Rachel? Where's Rachel?
That indistinguishable line of dialogue from the trailer that everybody was just like, what is he saying? What have you done?
They're just yelling and punches. Right.
As he gets closer. Bats are, generally speaking, very top-heavy. They do not have much muscular tissue that basically forms along their legs and other joints. They carry a lot of muscle up on the top that allows for their wings to fly. I think that our half-man, half-bat would have to be very top-heavy. Robert Pat-Bat would definitely be skipping leg day, which fits within the movie. We don't really see him running a lot. That very first scene we're introduced to him in the subway scene where he comes out of the dark, he's got that slow walk. I think it's just he's got really, really tiny little bat legs.
The entire movie, he's got a slow walk.
Now, you might be saying, well, bats do hang upside down. They do, but that's just relaxation of hanging weight basically on those joints and ligaments. They do it for energy efficiency. It's a lot easier to take off from that position. But this makes it even better because bats are also well known. The main time that they will turn themselves upright when they're hanging is to urinate and defecate. Batman is likely going to have a pull-up bar in front of his urinal, and it's going to be really awkward for situations sort of Alfred sort of walking in. The treehouse is going to have some really fucked up plumbing.
I was about to say, poor Alfred for probably having to clean up all that.
Right?
Especially because this plays into my main question for you, Dave. One thing I do know about bats, and I'm wondering if our man bat has the same situation. Are his testicles above his penis?
They are. So, and this leads into another great point. Does anyone here know how most megabats mate and attract a mate?
Oh, please tell us, Dave.
Waving their dick around like a helicopter.
During the mating season, males will mark a 2-meter stretch of a branch with their strong scent glands. The scent attracts females, and courtship begins with vocalizations, flapping, and grooming. Mating is usually incredibly noisy. I read a couple of different bat ecologists saying, like, this is some fucking sounds. Males will also mate with many females during their courtship behavior. So I want you to picture Batman sitting at the top of the tower where he's trying to attract Catwoman, either dropping his scent glands or just pissing a nice 2-meter stretch basically down the top of the tower to kind of mark this. She shows up, the smell's kind of already a little bit questionable, and then let's say that they actually do get down to business. Now, many women will say that they want to hear their male partners being more vocal during copulation, but I don't think any woman wants the bat on top of them just screaming the entire time, "Where's Rachel? Where's Rachel? Where's Rachel? Where's Rachel?" Furthermore, as I said, he copulates, or they're known to copulate with multiple females during that session, so very much we're going to have a scene of Batman standing up, zipping up afterward, and he's like, "Well, I'm going to go see what Poison Ivy's up to." Bats are well-known hibernators during the winter season. Not all bats do it. Some do migrate, but we know that Batman is not migrating. Therefore, I don't think that the bat criminal service is going to be great during the wintertime. And finally, as the winter starts to approach, our bat is going to have to start collecting fat stores during that period of time. Batman's going to hit the munchies hard, guys. We're going to see a Batman out there fighting crime, Haagen-Dazs in one hand, fighting gloves in the other. There's going to be lots of breaks where, like, an already top-heavy dude is just like, "Oh, guys, I gotta get 2 more spoonfuls in, Alfred, and then
I have low blood sugar."
I enjoy the also if he's hibernating, the fact that the criminals all just wait right till winter and then start up again, because they're like, "Okay, Batman's gone for 6 months, we're all good."
That was the point I was going to bring up, because at least then it's convenient for real world crime statistics, because at least serial killers tend to be more active in the warmer months and maybe not dormant, but not as active during winter. So at least he can excuse it that way when he has his mandatory nap.
Well, my man bat, you can also just simply outrun, which explains, again, during that first scene where the teenager who's gotten into the fight turns and just sort of runs off and Batman just watches him go. I don't think he can chase him. I think he's just like, "Oh, good, good. He's running."
TJ, having worked with big brown bats, proper common name, how would you rate their demeanor as compared to Robert Pattinson's?
I mean, they could definitely be fairly broody. Yeah. Certainly not as emo, though, as Rob Pat-Bat. But yeah, I mean, you know, they're not the warmest creatures, but they can be fairly personable as well, and, you know, individualistic in their personalities. So, yeah.
How would you rate their haircuts as compared to Robert Pattinson's?
Much better.
How would, if you were comparing them to a big brown bat, how would Robert Pattinson's hair have looked?
I think a little more flow, a little bushy, maybe, you know, just coming out of the blow dryer or something.
Adding on to my physiology, are you seeing any other points that our half man, half bat would be occupying from your experience?
I mean, I'd add on to your comment of him being slow. I mean, chances are he's going to be crawling, not walking, right? On all fours. So he's definitely going to be real slow, I agree.
Wouldn't he also just constantly be making a fist until he, like, pries open his hands?
Definitely, yes.
Did someone want to talk about white nose?
So, yeah, I mean, for all the listeners who don't know, I mean, white nose syndrome is caused by a fungus, and it certainly has impacted a large number of bats all over North America, you know, especially in Canada and the U.S., northeastern U.S., and out west as well. So yeah, I mean, I know we talked about Batman being a tree bat here, but, you know, if he's in a cave, I mean, the villains are very wise to be throwing biological warfare on him, throwing white nose syndrome down there in his cave. I mean,
just go into his cave or treehouse and kick him while he's sleeping so he wakes up and interrupts his hibernation, and you're like, "Good, good, you've used up too much energy. You won't make it through the winter."
Stupid fat bat.
So we know that a lot of microbats, for some reason, are able to, and Adam, you're the disease ecologist here, so jump in if I'm wrong, but we know that a lot of these small bats are able to actually retain really high viral loads, Yeah, so they can shed a lot of the virus without being really heavily affected themselves.
Mm-hmm. It's something to do, I believe, with their immune system. They have, from my understanding, because of their, a lot of, at least for the cave bats, their social living situations, they've developed incredibly robust immune systems, because that kind of living, usually with close relatives, makes you very prone to disease outbreak. And like Sam said, bats are reservoirs for an enormous amount of viruses. The Ebola, for example, a lot of species can come from bats from many different countries in Africa. You have a lot of coronaviruses, which is a group of viruses, not just the coronavirus everyone knows about today, also come from bats in a lot of different ways. And this is where you have this kind of what we call a zoonose, so a disease that moves from a non-human animal into humans. So it can be very dangerous to be exposing yourself to bats in that way.
And there were plenty of bat ecologists who were warning about the possible of future virus outbreaks, even from the coronavirus family, 10 years ago. So what we've seen over the last 2 years, this is very much predicted by many ecologists.
Yeah, and I should stress that this does not mean that bats are evil and you should not be afraid of them. Bats are fine. They perform a very, very crucial ecosystem service, but leave them alone. Don't handle them. If there are bats around, call a professional. Put up bat shelters in your yard. Bats need all the help they can get, just like a lot of other animals. Don't kill bats.
Yeah, you should be leaving them the fuck alone, but this is, the coronavirus is not the reason.
Exactly.
Yeah, and a good point here to stress is that, you know, it's not just the bats themselves that are spreading the disease, right? They spread it to another species that is a little bit in closer contact with humans, such as agricultural animals. And a lot of this is due to human encroachment, to deforestation and habitat loss for these bats.
It's also been suggested that for certain species of bats, they're more likely to shed more of the virus if they're highly stressed as well. So as TJ was saying, deforestation, fragmentation has not only brought us into closer contact with a lot of these species, it's brought them into contact with other species that we have very close contact with. So yeah, kind of fucked everything up. Anyway, on that happy note, let's make a Catwoman.
So, Catwoman. Libby and I had a really good time with this, especially mm-hmm. because we had probably 30 minutes to an hour worth of conversation about, okay, how do we interpret this challenge? Are we making a actual cat person? Are we making a human who is cat-like somewhere in the middle? And we kind of landed on a more realistic version of a human with these maybe some kind of issues, disorders, or behaviors that would make them more cat-like, and kind of what that would look like.
Oh, so it's not going to be just from the movie Cats?
No buttholes here.
I mean, they do have very high definition and obvious buttholes.
Show me the buttholes.
No. There are buttholes, because this is important. We need this for the cat, for our Catwoman. She has to have a butthole. It's very,
very prominent butthole.
If it's not in 3D, but you can get one of those little jewel collar covers for it, which I don't know why the fuck people get them, but they do. Look it up. It's a thing.
The jewel butthole covers. Yep.
Razzle dazzle.
For cats.
Well, it's a little ringer on the tail, and it covers the butthole.
They have it for dogs, too.
Cats are known for a lot of different behaviors, characteristics, and physicality, one of which is going to be vision. So cats have a bit more of a visual spectrum than we do. So they can see into the ultraviolet, and these are things that are not visible for human beings. But the ability to see at night is something that they definitely have a lot more of than us. But despite that, unlike humans, cats are going to be more or less colorblind. So our Catwoman, though she will be able to see quite well, just about everything is going to be in grayscale, or without the vivid kind of distinction between red, green, or other colors that we see. And as a side note to that, I saw a humorous yet almost heartbreaking video of a TikTok personality who put up a video about her shirt, had been criticized for calling her nails brown when they were actually green, taking a test as she was recording and kind of realizing in real time that she's colorblind. And that was quite the journey to experience.
So what you're saying is our Catwoman won't be able to tell what color her butthole bejeweler is.
No, but you know, her her friends will, and that's what's important.
So she's also going to have sensitive hearing. Cats obviously can hear really well. So there is an issue, disorder, I'm not sure what it is, but it's called hyperacusis, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yeah.
So people with hyperacusis have perfectly normal hearing, but they have like reduced tolerance and increased sensitivity to specific sound levels. So cats also have very sensitive ears. So that's kind of where we were going with that.
In addition to these other sensibilities, the cats have, while not as robust of a sense of smell as other animals, like dogs or especially bears tend to have, like which we touched on during our Wheel of Time episode, they do have a better sense of smell than humans. And in particular, it is going to be very sensitive. So a disorder, or a condition that some humans have is hyperosmia, which is a increased sensitivity to smell. And in this case, it's usually accompanied by unpleasant symptoms associated with these smells. So we've all seen these humorous videos of cats retching or gagging at the smell of coffee or plants or even their humans' feet sometimes. So Selena Kyle, unfortunately, is not only going to be very sensitive to these loud noises and be very afraid of and averse to vacuums, she's going to hate that lovely smell of coffee in the morning, which to me is a nightmare in and of itself.
Well, she's also going to be like obsessed with covering up bad smells too. So even though she can't, you know, she might retch, like she's going to come over and like throw your coffee out the window. Just like absolutely get rid of this bad smell in my face right now.
She's probably even going to have some pretty horrendous body odor because cats also have a huge aversion to smells on them that aren't natural. Mm-hmm. They do a very quick and thorough job of covering that up, either by grooming themselves, rubbing in the dirt, what have you. So she's going to be very averse to perfume, to conditioner, shampoo, any kind of cosmetic that's going to help her smell nice. She'll be staying away from it. So homegirl's going to reek.
but she will be a clean smelling though. Like, sorry, not clean smelling. She'll be very clean. So she's going to stay away from bad smell. But she's going to be kind of very obsessed with self-grooming, maybe looking in the mirror all the time, brushing her hair constantly. On the hair note, she's going to be excessively shedding in both spring and fall. So hair everywhere, just coming out in clumps. She will also have two fewer teeth, as cats only have 30 teeth and not 32. So I'll let you imagine maybe, which teeth those are.
Maybe it's a case for like my younger brother and I wrestling on the 4th of July when we were children and me knocking out both of his front teeth in one fell swoop. So maybe that's what happened to her. Maybe she's born without it. Maybe it's Maybelline. You know, we never really know.
Well, she doesn't like Maybelline. It smells too bad.
Exactly. So it's definitely not Maybelline. She's also going to be a very intelligent, patient, and good at calculations, if you will. So cats themselves are very intelligent animals. They can be taught tricks, but they're, unlike dogs, it's not going to be a very easy process, and they're not going to be as engaged with it as, you know, other animals would be. But cats have been known to, in the process of hunting, if we're going to go very stereotypical here and talk about a mouse, if they see a mouse go into a hole and they can, if they will walk around and determine that is the only exit that mouse has, they will sit outside of that hole and wait for hours for the eventuality of that mouse coming out. So I think that much like the Riddler in this Batman movie, she's going to be thinking things through. She's going to be very patient and waiting for her moment in the sun.
I would also like to point out that we know that cats, whilst they, you know, they do kill and they hunt when let outside, which, Adam, do you want to...
Keep your cats inside.
But we know that for, I think the estimate is that for every one creature they kill and eat, they kill about three others, just kind of practice to keep their, yep, you know, hunting skills sharp and their prey in, their prey drive in check. And so I posit that for every bad guy that Zoe Kravitz beats up, she's just going to find some fucking rando on the street and kick the shit out of him just to keep her skills
yeah,
high.
Yeah,
that's a much nicer version than what we have.
I was going to say, what we have is that she's a little psychotic. So she basically walks around with a BB gun shooting small birds and mice and squirrels for no reason.
Yes.
But she does eat some of them, just not most of them.
Just not most of them.
Okay.
And if she has a romantic partner, she will bring it home for them and just drop it at their feet or just like leave it for them in the bed to wake up with, Godfather style.
So she's also going to be very...
So Bruce Wayne just wakes up and there's a couple of dead birds.
Exactly. She's also going to be very touchy-feely when she's happy, and then uncontrollably maybe like humming when she's happy as well. That's kind of like what we equated the human equivalent of a purr would be, is to hum constantly. She's also going to be pretty brave. Cats are known to attack animals about twice their size, especially when they're young or threatened. So she's going to be going after some big old beefy bad guys for sure.
She is, but she's also going to be very much set in her ways. So cats are creatures of habit, like plenty of animals and humans are as well. But in this case, it can cause a lot of distress and discomfort if you take a cat out of its routine or out of its comfort zone. So things like moving house, getting them into the car to go to the vet. TJ, I'm sure you have plenty of examples or experience with this kind of thing, with these animals being very, very worried and very freaked out.
Oh, yeah, the good old fractious cat. Always a pleasure to work with.
That's why you get the big like eagle handling mitts to handle this wild, uncontrollable, aggressive, and scared animal with sharp ends at every end. So with that, translate into a human with Catwoman. If Zoe Kravitz has her, you know, her morning routine of getting up, doing her, you know, doing like washing her face, brushing her teeth, all that stuff. But then she goes downstairs, goes to the little corner bakery for her morning coffee. Let's say there's construction that morning and she can't walk down the sidewalk because she always does. She's going to freak the fuck out. That could come across as anger. It could come across as being scared. It could come across as potentially depression. But either way, her entire day and potentially week will be completely thrown off.
She's going to be hyperflexible, possibly with extra bones in her spine, with about maybe like what Adam, you said, 20 extra vertebrae.
About 20 extra vertebrae compared to a human.
We kind of posited, or she might have, humans have been known to have what is called hypermobility spectrum disorder. One of these disorders is called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and that's kind of associated with extremely elastic, stretchy skin. It is fragile and bruises easily, but the joints in particular are hypermobile. This happens when humans don't produce enough collagen, so they basically are... Think contortionist, and that's what you got. Yeah. So Selena might have this syndrome or some version of it.
Which is not necessarily a good thing, because even though that would help her in her gymnast pursuits as a cat burglar and being very flexible and diving through things, and because she is a cat and a cat woman and she has a butthole, she's going to spend a lot of her time grooming herself, and that's part of grooming yourself, and hyperflexibility is very necessary for that. Mm-hmm. But it can also lead to a plethora of health issues, and the median life expectancy for someone with some of these disorders is 48.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Causes a lot of organ and organ failure. So Jacobson's organ is also known as the vomeronasal organ, and those named after two different bones in your as part of your skull. So this is an organ that I believe is present in pairs on the, think about it, on the roof of your mouth. And it's not only involved in olfaction or smelling, but it helps with actually placing pheromones.
Yeah.
And if my understanding of this is correct, this is how cats can kind of distinguish between different cats that are in their surroundings. Males spend a lot of time marking. If you have male cats, you know that if you're not careful and if your cat is poorly trained, it will piss all over everything, which can cause a lot of very unpleasant smells. But cats use these to kind of to help with this kind of marking of territory and sensing of these pheromones. And humans have one. It's just no longer functional and vestigial at this point. But we think for Selena Kyle, hers is actually going to be working. And I don't know how that's going to translate to humans, because we, unlike cats, we cannot smell pheromones, but maybe we have them. So she could potentially be very adverse to or very attracted to some people based off of their pheromones, if they have them.
Yeah, she's totally going to be doing the flame in response.
Exactly.
You know, with her upper lip open on.
Exactly.
If you've ever seen that with, if you've seen that with like a horse or a goat or a cow
or a cat,
where they just flip that top lip up and they're just like,
savoring the flavor.
Get in my nose.
Exactly. So we also posited that she definitely is a vigilante, if not for her day job, an independent contract worker, as she will be sleeping 16 hours a day. She probably has an arrest record for public indecency because she's just walking around her building pissing all the time. And then her neighbors must hate her if she lives in an apartment, because she will be having the loudest scream sex you can imagine.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
So definitely an anti-hero. Not a traditional hero.
Exactly.
She's
And
she's going to be one of those what we call a difficult personality.
Yeah. And if Batman ends up in a relationship with her, and if he's responsible, then he'll keep her inside.
Exactly. Especially because female cats tend to be a lot more territorial than male cats. And if there are other women around the building she lives in, around the city she lives in, there's going to be more of them. She will attack them on sight. So maybe keeping her inside is for the best.
That's our Catwoman.
Sounds like a babe.
Bask in it.
What the Rock is cooking! Last of all, we wanted to examine Catwoman and Batman, obviously, but we thought we'd give the Penguin a crack as well. More specifically, I would, since I love penguins. The first thing that, you know, might strike most people about the Penguin in his previous incarnations is that he's generally pretty short. This one, not so much, but obviously Danny DeVito, not what we'd call a gargantuan.
No.
That was an attempt to make, you know, a penguinish man with that awful beak and the just the greasy matted hair, which...
fits.
Not too far off from what we're going to be going with today. And very, very miniature. But there have been really large penguins on the face of the planet before. The largest we have today is the Emperor Penguin, but that, I mean, that's still only kind of TJ's height, so...
Oh, fucking got him! So a full 35 centimeters? A little bit over a foot?
Yeah.
Come on,
yeah.
I'm bigger than that. Put it in your pocket,
yeah. No, but penguins were the first dinosaurs to become this aquatic. Most of the species that you think about from earlier times were marine reptiles, not actually dinosaurs. So penguins were the first, technically the first dinosaurs to live an almost fully aquatic life. And there were giants for millions of years. Once a lot of the larger marine reptiles died out in the extinction event that killed the majority of the dinosaurs 65 million years ago, penguins could evolve to become a bit larger. They were still small compared to us. Well, there are a couple that might have gotten huge. There was Paleodiptes that may have gotten up to a little over 2 meters and probably about 115 kilos. There was also a couple of genuses, genera, I should say, called Anthropornis and Cumimanu. These are the, like I said, the genus names of the species. And we even know that not all of them were the kind of drab black and white tuxedos that we've heard of before. There was a genus which was thought to be about 1.7 meters tall called Inkayaku, I-N-K-A-Y-A-C-U. Apologies for butchering all these pronunciations. They actually found fossilized feathers on the skeleton with pigment storing cells in them. So we can tell that they actually had gray and reddish brown feathers, cool. Which is not... you know, not something you typically associate with a penguin.
Oh, interesting.
And penguins actually make really good fossils because unlike birds that have to fly, their bones are really dense because they need to be weighed down a little when they're underwater. So they're obviously really specialized for underwater life. Penguin wings are really, really stiff. They have really stiff arms and, well, arms, I say, but flippers because they need to generate massive amounts of power to keep them moving through the water. So our penguin man, Colin Farrell, is going to have enormous shoulder blades because the more kind of bone area you have, the more muscles you can attach to that. So he's just going to be this really enormously broad-shouldered man with the stiffest limbs you've ever seen in your goddamn life. He is not going to have real flexible elbows or anything like that. Shaking hands with him is going to be very strange. It's kind of going to be like... I appreciate that none of the listeners can see my... beautiful bit of physical comedy there.
The sound effects told the whole story.
So he's going to be a little uncoordinated, but very, very strong. Think Kingpin sort of fighting style in Into the Spider-Verse. That sort of
a big block.
Which leads me to a big listener question this week. If you were to combine the Kingpin and Penguin, a la some of Marvel and DC's Amalgam Comics, would he be called Pengpin or Kingwin? Up to you.
Kingwin.
Anyway. Yeah, he'd just have a very awkward upper body and very, very, like I said, dense, stiff bones and limbs. As I think everybody will know, penguins are very specialized for colder weather. Not only do a lot of species have to spend, you know, 90% of their lives underwater in very, very cold waters in the Antarctic and sub-Antarctic regions of the world, many of them spend a lot of their time on Antarctica, which obviously pretty cold place. And they have a lot of specializations for this sort of thing. They have really specialized, I guess you would call them vessels, called, and I don't know how to pronounce this at all, Rete Mirabile. R-E-T-E-M-I-R-A-B-L-E.
Rete, for sure.
Which allows them to transfer warm air going from the heart into the blood vessels where blood is returning to the heart, where it's much colder. So blood keeps much warmer throughout the entire body because of these specialized vessels.
Warm air coming from the heart or warm blood coming from the heart?
Warm blood coming from the heart transfers some of that heat to the colder blood that's going back to the heart.
Cool.
Yeah. So he's going to be best friends with Mr. Freeze, basically, because this man is going to be, you think of athletes that have, you know, something like 5-6% body fat. Penguins can have up to 30% of their body weight being blubber or fat. I'll talk about down a little bit later, but a lot of that warmth comes from the fact that they have this intensely dense fat we know as blubber. You can see it in so many types of seals, sea lions, and penguins as well. So he's going to be a bit of a wibbly-wobbly man.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just going to be so fucking hot all the time. But penguins have relatively little blubber on their arms, on their flippers and their feet. So he's going to be losing a lot of heat through these areas. So he's always going to have bare hands, never going to have gloves on. You would think he would be walking around, have bare feet whenever possible. And he's just going to be sweating, I envision, out of these parts constantly. There is a human condition that can lead to this. Adam and Libby gave me the term beforehand. It's called hyperhidrosis. Hyperhidrosis, H-I-D-R-O-S-I-S. Abnormally excessive sweating, whereby you can meet people who just they have sweat dripping off their hands constantly. This is absolutely going to be him. He's going to be way too hot constantly. He should be moving to an Arctic region, really. The Arctic or the Antarctic. Just be friends with Mr. Freeze or one of the 15 other ice-based villains in the DC universe.
So you're saying he's the perfect Canadian?
Yeah, yes. Should be living up in Edmonton or
Halifax.
What's the other place? Anchorage. Yeah, Halifax. Yeah.
Well, Anchorage is in the US. How dare you?
I know, it's in Alaska. And what was that thing we... Barrow. No, it's not called Barrow anymore. It's got an Inuit name now. But they also have penguins. Like I said, a lot of the heat comes from the blubber, but the chicks haven't built up as much blubber as the adults yet. So they have intensely dense, downy feathers. And the feathers of the adults are also pretty dense as well. So think of every just really hairy-chested man you've ever seen with that, like, just fluffy black hair that's intensely thick on their chest. That's everywhere. All over his shoulders, peeking out from behind his little sweater vest. Yeah, just look.
Coming out the short sleeves.
No shaming people for excessive body hair, but there's going to be a lot of it. There's going to be a lot of body hair on this guy. So, I mean, you know, he could be shaving, though, because you want... I mean, he's not in a cold area, so you're going to want to be keeping as cool as possible. So perhaps he's, you know, just shaving his ridiculously fast-growing body hair once a day. I really feel bad for the barbers who have to do that for him.
I can tell you from personal experience, unless you have a friend and or a partner to help you out with that, it's going to be very hard to get your shoulders, your back, and the back of your arms.
Especially if you've got incredibly stiff shoulders and arms.
Yes.
Just dips himself in Nair.
Yeah, like a vat of Nair.
Oh, that sounds horrible.
Oh, dear God. Yeah. So, the inside of penguins' mouths are quite horrific. I found during the week this awful picture, which turned out to be a green sea turtle. But, I mean, the reason that penguin mouths are similar, are horrific is for the same reason, because they need to keep slippy shit down their throat. When they bite into something, slippy they need to be shit. Able to...
Just sorry, we need to go back. Yeah, slippy shit.
That's the scientific term.
Yeah. Keep slippery down. Yeah. The whole point of turtle and penguin's mouths is keep slippery down, basically. You need to be able to grab something and you need to be able to keep it in your beak as some slippy shit is trying to escape your mouth.
Slorp, slorp.
So many euphemisms here.
For sea turtles, a lot of the time it's jellyfish. For penguins, obviously, it's going to be fish. Yeah. Keep slipping down. But yeah, so the inside of their mouths are lined with, I think, I'm not sure what the technical term is, but it just looks like these huge rows of kind of backwards teeth.
It's like a baleen almost.
They're not actual teeth. They're just kind of... Yeah, absolutely. And it just helps them clamp onto fish. So I don't know how this is going to look on a human, but not pretty. Not pretty at all. He's going to have one of the weirdest tongues you've ever seen on a man. I would pity his sexual partners. I mean, just in general, from the character we see here, I also pity his sexual partners. Yeah. But especially if there's any, you know... Not going to be a fan of the penguin's cunnilingus, in any case. Moving on.
Cunnilingus or cunnipinguis?
Or a slippy sloppy.
Slippy sloppy.
Slippy sloppy.
Keep slipping down. Now, one really fun thing about penguins, though, is that people might have heard of the case of male emperor penguins, and I think it's a few other species that do this as well, whereby male penguins have really strong paternal instincts, because for massive amounts of time, they have to just stand and take care of an egg while the female goes and builds up her body fat for months at a time. So they just stand there in these enormous circles of different penguins, of male penguins, sharing body heat, like rotating their position in this enormous circle with the egg on their legs, and they lose up to 40% of their body weight while doing it. So I think that, a la the penguin we see in the DC Harley Quinn series, this is a penguin who would have very strong paternal instincts to his children.
Cool.
So, you know, we can give him one bonus point for that, right? He's going to be a good father, at least. It's going to be a horrible, hairy, sweaty, oily, smelly, stiff-limbed man, but he's going to be a good dad. I just want to point out that there's also no penguins in the Northern Hemisphere whatsoever. The furthest north they get is, I think...
Southern Argentina?
Some areas on the... Yeah, on the west coast of Argentina, there are a couple of places where penguins can get up to. They get up to Australia, obviously. I've seen...
New Zealand too, right?
Had lots of encounters with fairy penguins. Yeah, yeah, yeah. One of the reasons for this is that the way we look at a globe is very, very skewed to make up for the fact that there is so little land in the southern hemisphere. So normal maps of the world devote a lot more space to the northern hemisphere than they do the southern hemisphere. Often it'll take up to 60 to 70% of the map, despite the fact that the globe is obviously split 50-50 between the north and the south. That's just to make up the fact that there is no land in the southern hemisphere. You've got Australia, you've got the bottom half of South America, and very little of Africa as well. And so penguins do have a very limited distribution range based on that fact.
Mm-hmm.
But they are a species that there are a lot of different species of penguins. We often just think of, you know, the emperor penguins because of, you know, we've all seen Happy Feet and the March of the Penguins as voiced by Morgan Freeman. But there's tons of different species of penguins. Some of them get further north than the others. Generally, the smaller ones are because smaller penguins are going to be better suited to warmer areas.
The Adelie.
Yeah. Adelie penguins, fairy penguins.
I was going to say, if you want a really good, really good documentary on some different types of penguins, I highly recommend the 1995 cartoon, The Pebble and the Penguin.
Yes, please.
Yeah. I also recommend checking out clips of Benedict Cumberbatch narrating a penguin documentary earlier in his days and just not being able to say the word penguin at all.
Penguin.
Getting it wrong every single time. Yeah, it was penguin.
Penguin. If you ever want to see how truly horrifying a leopard seal is as a predator, just watch Pebble and the Penguin, because those things are scary as fuck.
Yeah. But yeah, so Colin Farrell's character would likely not be this New Yorker, but I think he would have roots in, I don't know, South Africa, Argentina, Chile, Australia, and New Zealand. I feel that the character loses a lot of its... menace if he's got a strong Aussie accent
or,
in the middle of Gotham.
Or he's got a lot to gain, because now thinking about Andy Serkis, I'm just thinking of Andy Serkis's Claw from South Africa and just having that insane accent in the Penguin, which would be incredible.
Calling Batman cunt the entire time.
Oh, yes. Get out of here, Batman, or the next fling of poop I send at you will come very much faster.
Speaking of fast poop, I don't know if it's just because of their diet or also because of their physiology, but penguins are known for oily, stinky, and projectile shit. One of the only little tidbit I have on this is one way that researchers found a group of penguins they were looking for is by using satellite imaging and seeing the ring of shit around the penguin colony.
Oh, gross. So he's going to have a toilet installed in the office.
So much like, I mean, I'm seeing a lot of parallels between Dave's the Batman and Sam's Penguin, because they're both going to have a lot of very top-heavy, weird-looking dudes that have a lot of bathroom issues. And meanwhile, they're both, I guess, maybe trying to hit on our antisocial, pissing-everywhere Catwoman.
Everyone just smells terrible.
I'd love to see a fight between the two of them, just swinging their massive stiff arms at each other constantly. Oh, dear. I feel really bad for the Penguin's cleaning staff, though. Like, his helpers. Like, you got to shave this man once a day. You got to clean up all that fur. Just dripping sweat on the furniture constantly. Smelling up the place. Cleaning out that toilet. I feel very bad for his staff.
No wonder he's in crime.
So, Danny DeVito was the most accurate representation.
Yeah, I mean, that dense, slick-backed hair he had.
Black slime coming out of his mouth.
Plenty of blubber, very thick shoulders. It's not too bad, yeah.
I may have saved the mayor's baby, but I refuse to save a mayor who stood by helpless as a baby while Gotham was ravaged by a disease that turned Eagle Scouts into crazed clowns and happy homemakers into Catwomen.
So, long-time listeners of the show will know how much of a fan of kids' movies, and in particular the Lego Movie, I am. And despite the fact that, don't get me wrong, I love this Batman, and I love Christian Bale's Batman, I even love Michael Keaton's Batman, and yeah, Ben Affleck's fine, whatever. I love Will Arnett's Batman. It is just such a funny portrayal of all the insecurities that a Batman would have just brought roaring into life. And look, Will Arnett can be difficult in some roles. He can be very unlikable at times. But I think as Lego Batman, he is just perfect. I didn't like the movie that much. If I had to highlight one film, it would be him in the Lego Movie and even the Lego Movie 2. But for me, I love that character so much. He's so much more interesting than Emmett. Miss him whenever he's not on screen. Yeah. But I mean, Emmett's designed that way. So, you know, what are you going to do?
I really like Lego Batman. Super fun.
Yeah. I think for me, it's got to be George Clooney. I mean, if you're gonna have the ultimate playboy Bruce Wayne, then you pick the ultimate playboy George Clooney. Like, it just is. And I think
he's a great Bruce Wayne.
Yes. Yeah. And I think for me, it's like, there is absolutely, without a doubt, nostalgia influencing that decision. I just love the campiness of those movies so much. And I feel like he is he's always one of those actors that has like a little twinkle in his eye. And he brings that to Batman. And it fits with those style of movies. Could I see him playing, you know, modern Batman now? Absolutely fucking not. But for that setting, it was great.
If you're introducing someone to Batman for the first time, which good fucking luck with that, finding somebody who doesn't know who Batman is, you should watch the 66 Batman movie and then show them Batman Forever and Batman and Robin and say that they're continuations of the 66 Batman movie. And it works really well.
PJ?
I think for me, growing up with Batman, the animated series, you know, Kevin Conroy, you know, on the opposite of Lego Batman, he's just the perfection of Batman.
I'm glad Kevin Conroy got a shout out.
Like, you know, he's smart, he's the detective, huge chin.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
And he's kind of the perfect package.
I think for me, if I had to choose one, it would also be Kevin Conroy's Batman from Batman the Animated Series. But as far as the live action ones go, I can't really pick one because they all have different things that I like about Batman. To Libby's point, George Clooney would be my favorite Bruce Wayne for sure. Because he is the billionaire playboy. He plays that role really well. But Christian Bale's Bruce Wayne is also interesting because he's trying to play that, but also as somebody who does work all night. And so he's just fucking asleep at meetings all the time and just doesn't give a shit because he's not really running the company. As far as like action Batman being capable, specifically the warehouse scene from, is it Justice League or is it Batman Superman?
Batman Superman.
Batman Superman. That scene with Ben Affleck, I think, is the best on-screen portrayal of Batman being a capable martial artist superhero that we've ever seen. Because you have Christian Bale fucking karate chopping with his awkward, big, like, in broad daylight like suit where he can't turn his head because that's how the suit is made. George Clooney is not... It's a different movie. That's totally okay. I don't really have a lot of experience with Val Kilmer or...
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton, thank you. As Batman, I haven't really watched those movies as much as I've seen the other ones. But I also really appreciate the more realistic take on this that Robert Pattinson brings to the movie. So they all bring something different for me, but all in all, Kevin Conroy as the animated Batman.
I gotta say, I never found Christian Bale's gargling marbles Batman voice silly.
Same.
Until I watched this version of the Batman and realized Same. That a Batman voice can just be a normal voice. Yeah.
Just slightly change your
I
voice.
I always thought, oh, you know, he's just trying to, yeah, he's just trying to, he's doing a voice, don't worry. But then I watched this movie where Robert Pattinson does a fantastic Batman voice that's not, I mean, it's not ridiculous at all. And now, yeah, now whenever I hear that Batman voice in the other movies, I'm like, God, that's dumb.
I mean, just do what Vigilante did in Peacemaker. Like, you have to change your voice at least a little bit because you just sound like Vigilante when your mask is off. No, I don't. This is my voice. This is how I talk. No, it's not. Stop.
This is what my real voice sounds like.
Do we feel bad for any of the quote-unquote monsters in this movie?
I mean...
I feel bad for the monsters we've created. I was going to say,
yeah, our personal Frankensteins? Yeah. Absolutely.
Dave and TJ's bat, absolutely.
Our monster cat woman is also, she's going to be living a rough life that will be over before she hits middle age, probably. So that's not.
Oh, no, she sounds perfect to me.
Like I said, I don't feel so bad for the penguin, but more the people who have to work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
As far as the movie goes, I don't really feel bad for the penguin because he's, maybe there were circumstances that got him into this role, but he's a career criminal at this point and he knows what he's doing. So. That's the boat he's in.
Yeah.
I feel bad for Robert Pattinson because he went through a very traumatic situation and his entire life has been fucked up as a result, despite being, you know, an incredibly rich, you know, trust fund kid, basically. Yeah. It's clearly had an effect on him and ruined his relationship, even with Alfred, who was basically his father. And him realizing that, I think, was a really nice, poignant part of that movie. And then for Selina Kyle, she also seems to be a victim of very unfortunate circumstance and loses a close friend, a girlfriend. It's not really clear from the movie, but she finds someone who's very close to her dead body in a car, which is pretty fucked up.
And I feel bad for everyone of Gotham.
Right?
No shit.
I've always wondered that. Like, what is so good about this goddamn city?
Why does anyone live there or go back?
Yeah. I mean, I appreciate that some people can't get out, but remember in Peacemaker when they say at the end, Adebayo and her wife say, let's go back to Gotham. I was like,
bad choice.
Maybe
bad
not.
Choice, Sess.
I would never.
Yeah.
Anywhere else? Yeah. Would we recommend this movie?
I would. I would definitely recommend this movie.
I would, but I'm not watching this again for like 5-6 years. I have no desire to go and watch this now.
I wouldn't be mad about watching it again. Like, if a friend really wanted to watch it and I had it at the house, I'd be happy to watch it, but I'm not going to actively see this movie up for a long time. That being said, it's a much, in a different way, but much like Infinity War or Endgame, it is a very long movie that doesn't necessarily feel long until you really think about, okay, the beginning scene, that felt like it happened yesterday, but you're just on a ride for the entire time, and it's really fun.
I think if you need a palate cleanser after, like, if you're a big Batman fan and need a palate cleanser after Ben Affleck, like, yeah, like, come back to Batman.
Definitely.
Rob Pat Bat Bat will treat you right.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a lot of people were not that enthusiastic about another Batman movie, and it is really freaking long, but I think it's worth it. You know, I probably wouldn't watch it again either for a long time, but it's definitely a refresher and something new.
I'm out of time.
Do we want a... Yeah, do we want a break from Batman at this point?
I think on TJ's now, I want a break from the Joker. Like, if you're going to do Batman, fine, but like, don't keep doing the same villains over and over and over.
I just want to find Rachel. Where's Rachel?
Do Condiment King.
Yeah, what Robert Pattinson said. Get Condiment King out there. He was fantastic in the Harley Quinn series.
Was he in that series?
So many fucking awesome... Yeah, he was in it. Yeah, he's the nemesis of Poison Ivy's boyfriend.
Okay, I just think about him as the... The little mention in Lego Batman where they're like, Condiment King, real villain.
Just spraying mustard on people. If you can make Polka Dot Man work in a movie, you can
absolutely.
Do Condiment
no
King.
No shit. Or Big Wheel. That's Marvel, though.
Yeah. Who else we got? Calendar Man. Who's another absurd villain that we could get? The Spot? Oh, hang on. The Spot might be Marvel.
Spot's Marvel. I mean, Man-Bat's fairly obscure for Batman. Most people don't know about that.
A Man-Bat you could totally do in the DC Extended Universe. Suicide Squad show that you can do anything.
Absolutely. Give it to James Gunn. He'll make a fucking movie with all of the Rose Gallery, and it'll be super fun and full of glam metal, and I'm here for it. So what do you do after you watch a AAA blockbuster worldwide phenomenon movie, he returned to a B movie. So next week we'll be turning to our schlocky B movie roots and watching Deep Rising. This time, unfortunately, without TJ and with more action from Dave. Yeah. And as we say here at the end of every episode, the monsters aren't real, but the science is.
No, as we say for the 100th episode.
For the 100th episode.
Thanks, TJ.
The 100 monsters aren't real, but the 100 sciences are.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's been a blast.
Fear is a tool. But when that light hits the sky, it's not just a call. It's a warning.
The only monster here is Sam, so fuck you, Sam.
Fuck off, cut.